This week in tennis.
Craig, you must be excited. Four Brits still standing at Wimbledon.
Well, it's... I'd like to say I'm thrilled, but the problem is we kind of have this quite often at Wimbledon that the British players do okay in rounds 1 to 3. You always get a few players making it through to the second and the third round. The problem is we don't back it up after Wimbledon or after the grass court season in the UK. When our guys come over in the fall to your US hard court season, you ain't going to see any of these guys. You ain't going to see any of these girls. They're just going to drop away again, and we'll be back in the same place next year. It's something I picked up on the BBC radio commentary last night, that they were thrilled by the number of British players coming through. But, you know, I've been here over the last 15, 20 years watching all these youngsters come through, and they don't really break into the top 100 and go win titles. I have to admit, it's probably the most promising group we've had in a while, but we'll come back and we'll talk about this in 5 years' time, and we'll see, you know, if they're still there or not.
That's right. Welcome to This Week in Tennis. I'm Phil Nasons, he's Craig Doyle, and this show is all about betting on tennis. We'll give you some insights from my 38-year coaching career. Craig will give you some insights from his amazing tennis photography career. And of course, we both are pretty good at this betting thing, so it should be a lot of fun. And Wimbledon, man, Wimbledon has been great. Great. But we got some questions. A lot of them, actually. Some of them will answer prior, well, when we talk about their matches. But there's one big question, actually two, and I think we can answer that together. Why did Jeannie Bouchard pull out of Wimbledon? Did that make any sense to you guys? And two, is Emma Raducanu really any good? And will she be in the top 100 come September? Loaded questions, Craig, but I'm sure you're ready to answer them. Jeannie Bouchard pulling out was a little strange to me.
We don't do the easy questions here on this show, do we?
No, we never do. You know what? We don't feed them softballs. We don't dick ride. We just do what we do and try to win people money, and we usually do. So, but Jeannie Bouchard pulling out, that was surprising considering that, you know, she talks about this great comeback she wants to have and all these other things, Craig, and then she doesn't show up for a great opportunity for someone who has reached this final.
Yeah, I mean, Eugenie Bouchard, I guess her motivation was the ranking points on offer and not the money. Like, you know, that like I do, that Eugenie Bouchard is pretty much similar to Emma Raducanu, apart from she didn't win the slam, but she got to a couple of finals. She got all the modeling contracts. She's made all of the money. She's still got a positive win-loss record. I think she reached something like 5 in the world or something. But for her at the moment, ranking points, I guess, is what was key. She didn't need to come here and play Wimbledon because she wanted the money. The money's still on offer. But I think for her, she wanted ranking points. Wimbledon were not offering ranking points this year due to the situation with the Russia-Ukraine conflict. So she's pulled out, which I think in terms of her profile is interesting because I can't remember the last time she was on my TV in a big-time tournament. You know, when was the last time she played a slam or an Indian Wells or a Madrid and got on the TV? I think it may have been, you know, Roland Garros when they played it last year in October. So she's been away for a long time. In terms of her profile, I think she's got a lot of work to do. Are we going to see her at the U.S. Open?
No. I would be afraid if I were her to show up there. No, she's not going to. You're not going to see her much more of her. You know what? And rightly so. She's got the money. She did have a big event here at Wimbledon a couple seasons ago. But outside of that, you know, she hasn't been able to back it up. She claimed some injuries, and maybe she has them. I think her life is a little different now. She's involved with a quarterback in Pittsburgh. She actually practiced at a club I was at for a couple of weeks before I got hurt. And at the end of the day, I don't pay much attention to her either way. But I wish her the best, but I don't think you're going to see her again. You know, that's an excuse, this Wimbledon thing. You would think someone who hasn't played since October, or very sporadically since October, would want to go out there, play, and just go out there and play. And feel the ball on your strings, the crowd, the grass, and get reacclimated to the tour again. And I thought that would be a great place for her. Well, she didn't think so, and she's running that show, so good luck to her. That's all I have to say. Now, the Emma Raducanu thing, is she any good? That's a loaded question. Of course she's good. She's great. She really is. You know what she did in New York? You're probably never going to see again. Not to say that it won't happen, but probably not in our lifetime. That's Herculean. She hasn't been able to back it up. I would say she's very good at striking the ball, but she's not very good at putting together a team that can help her succeed and navigate the waters that she has no idea she's swimming in.
I thought her movement was really poor. I watched her playing against Caroline Garcia, and she was standing about 6 feet behind the baseline to receive serve. Very flat-footed, you know, the split step. She doesn't step forward into the split step. If you watch, like, Federer or Murray or Djokovic or any of these great returners, they're up and they're moving forward into the ball with a split step. When she takes a split step, she's very flat-footed. If she makes a return, she doesn't then bounce off and then, you know, get her feet into position for the next ball coming. The ball's back there before her feet are set up. There's a lot of technical things that I spotted, and I thought, yeah, this is not, you know, good tennis. There's a lot of foundations missing, almost like she's getting maybe too much information from too many different people, and she's confused as to what's right. The game that she played against Garcia was entirely lateral, and I'm sure, you know, that's a word a lot of us sports fans, NFL fans in particular, will understand. She's going sideways, but she never comes forward into the court. You know, she wants to run back and forth on that baseline, but she doesn't want to step in and take the ball on. She's not going to come to the net. When you contrasted it to Garcia, Garcia's been a top 10 player. Let's not kid ourselves. She might be 75 at the minute, but she's been a good player. She's a good doubles player as well as Caroline Garcia.
Great doubles player. Caroline
Garcia, you know, is clever. She's standing inside the baseline to receive serve, puts pressure on Raducanu. And Raducanu's got a decent serve. When it goes in, it's a good serve. It's difficult to return. But if you stand there inside the baseline on first serve, that's said to your opponent, okay, if you get the serve, you nail it, you win the point. If you don't nail it and it comes anywhere near me, I'm going to stand on top of this and put pressure on you. But as soon as she plays the return as well, Garcia, she's moving. She's trying to come forward and come into the net. She's trying to rush you into playing a shot. And Raducanu just doesn't deal with that well at all. You know, she's stuck. She's glued onto that baseline. And it's just like she's gone into a shell where she's played a very basic brand of tennis. And, you know, coaches are going to look at that and they're going to pick that apart. And they're going to say to the players, bring her in. You know, you play a drop shot, she comes off that baseline, she's in trouble. Hit the ball short, she's got to come forward to it. She doesn't want to do that. She wants us to stand in that same sort of place just behind the baseline and play, and it was all really, it was poor to me. You know, the footwork wasn't particularly good, the movement wasn't particularly good. She hits a good ball, but you know, you've got to wait for the perfect ball to hit a good one, and you're not going to get the perfect ball of players who have a bit of ability and they know what you're doing, and they're going to tactically stop you from doing it. And I just felt that, yeah, it wasn't a complete performance by Raducanu. There's a lot of things missing. She's regressing somewhat. That's not to say that all the assets aren't there and they're locked away and whatever her coaching setup at the minute is not getting that out of her. But I didn't think it was good at all. I really did think her performance against Garcia was not even the top 50 performance. You know, we asked a question on the top of the show, will she be in the top 100? The way she's played since the US Open, I think she's got a losing record. She's won about 11 matches and lost somewhere around about 19, 20 matches since that US Open incredible success, the performances she's putting on are not top 100. You know, that's not top 100 tennis when you've got that kind of losing record, I'm afraid. So she's going to slide. She's going to slide big time. And the question will be if she's got the mentality to recover, because you can rise quickly in tennis. You can slide just as quickly, especially when all the ranking points are backed up in one event. She's had this whole season to accumulate more ranking points and steady herself so that when she did slide, she would still be top 30 or whatever. But that's not going to happen. This girl's going to slide big time. And whether she's got the mentality to come back or not, I'm not sure.
Well, you know what? We talked about this in September, Craig, if you remember the footwork. Her recovery step is non-existent. You know, it's interesting, though, because when she won the U.S. Open, she was coming forward, remember? Attacking short balls and finishing points, and she stopped doing that. Now, maybe that has a lot to do with firing her coach. Maybe he had more to do with that than anything else, I guess. I don't know, man. All I know is I have many associations in the sport of tennis, professional tennis, including a couple of people who've played against her, and they say it's a piece of cake. That's what they say. She doesn't move, doesn't try. But here's the thing that's ticking players off in the locker room. And this is something that you're not hearing very often because, you know, it's the Emma Raducanu show right now. But that fist pumping, after people miss drop shots and after people miss shots, and that look down there and pumping the fist, that's bad for business. And I'm going to tell you, she's going to make a lot of enemies. I promise you, if someone would have done that to me, we'd be having a discussion after the match. There's no question about that. The funny part is the pump in the fist. I know it's supposed to keep her pumped up, but you can't really show up your opponent at the same time, especially when you're losing. And I think that she's got to curtail that. This coaching situation is bizarre. The entire thing is bizarre. Too many whispers in her ear. That's what it's all about. Not to mention the fact that her life completely changed. 1 year ago today, she was having an anxiety attack at Wimbledon. Next thing you know, she's winning the U.S. Open as a qualifier and getting money. You know, it's one thing to win an ITF tournament. Good for her, by the way. She's won as a pro even before this amazing effort in New York. But at the end of the day, Craig, she's got so many people pulling on her this way, that way, in 100 ways. And the other thing is this, most tennis professionals, I'm talking top people, they already make out their schedule for the following year, right after the U.S. Open. They know where they're going to be. She has no idea where she's going to play next or even when. That's bizarre to me. You know, and this whole rise to wherever, you're right, she had a chance to pick up a lot of points, solidify that ranking, because, you know, it's really hard to repeat at a major. And she has so many opportunities and still has. But I don't think she's going to take advantage of those opportunities as much as she will the off-court stuff. And good for her, too. She's won her major, and that she's made that pretty clear, too. She's starting to get testy. What, I've won a major? And people snicker at that in the locker room. Good for her, you know. Her life changed. Like Caroline Garcia said, her life changed. But at the end of the day, she needs to change everything now. She needs to, her team needs to pull back on the sponsor money, because that increases the hype and the expectations. Find a coach who you can actually stick with for a while and not just let me grab the latest misfit off the LTA shelf. It doesn't make sense to me. She looked horrific against Garcia. She didn't look that much better against Van Uytek either in the first round. I thought she was going to lose. Either way, I cashed that winner against Garcia. That was easy money. And life goes on. But we have matches for Friday and Saturday, Craig. And we'll answer these other questions as we get to them. Now, you're probably not going to benefit from the first couple of matches this morning, but we're going to get after them anyway. We've got Ostapenko taking on Bezhou at 6 a.m. That could be interesting, Craig, but I think Ostapenko is our girl here. What do you think?
Yeah, she played okay the other week. Can't remember if it was Eastbourne or one of the other smaller satellite tournaments in the UK leading into this one. I'm sure she reached the final. I hate playing Ostapenko. She's hit or miss. She can either be brilliant or absolutely rotten. Against Begu, I mean, yeah, I like Ostapenko here. I don't see Ostapenko going much further than the round after this because the winner will probably play Maria Sakkari. But yeah, I think Ostapenko wins this one. But yeah, rather your money than mine.
Yep, I'll take Ostapenko here. Why not? And then we've got Jewel Niemeyer. Nice player. She's taking on Lesia Tursenko. Tursenko is a +130 dog. In full confession, I gave out Tursenko in the Line Grinder Slack chat. You can find that link if you wish in my Twitter handle, at LineGrinders14. Anyhow, I got Tursenko to win this one. I don't like the way Niemeyer's playing, even though she's won a few matches. I think this Tursenko buries her today.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be close. I mean, there's not too much difference in the rankings. I think they're both around about 100 in the world. But Sorenko's probably got the advantage at the minute that she's Ukrainian, and she's going to get a lot of love from the crowd.
Oh, yes.
I think that one, which court is that one going out on?
I'm not sure. I would think it's probably going to be on one of the back courts today. I don't know.
This
Wimbledon website is really hard to navigate.
Yeah, they don't like making it easy for you to figure out what's on where and when. I've just picked it up. So Renko's on court 18, which is court 18's, it's real nice. It's one of the smaller courts near the back, but it allows you to stand above the court and look down on it. You know, like the old grandstand at the US Open?
Right.
You can stand on the roof next to the broadcast center and look down. So they've got a big stand on one side, two small stands down the other, then people looking down from the top. It's a real good one because you can walk by and get a bit of the action without having to go into the stadium. I really love it. It's one of those courts on the tour that there's just not really anything else like it anymore. I think Sorenko, you know, there'll be a lot of people who've come in with a Grams pass who come to watch this. They'll be, you know, right behind her. I think she'll love it, and I think you're right. She's probably going to win this one.
I think so too. Now, Kaya Yuvan is taking on Heather the Feather, Heather Watson. Watson is a big underdog. Yuvan has been playing very well. Heather has too, though. Any hope for Heather the Feather today? Because I don't have much hope. I don't have really any interest in this match, but we'll log it at Betstamp for you. Go ahead. What do you think?
Jovan's one of those with an upside, right? She's
yes,
sort of 2021 on the way up. The thing that kind of gets me, and Jovan got to this stage last year as well, by the way, the only thing that goes in Watson's favor is how many times has Jovan been on court one? You know, how many times she had 10,000-12,000 people watching it, because that's what you're going to have when you play on that court. And Heather Watson, she's been to the third round a couple of times before. It's as good a chance as ever for Heather Watson to get to the fourth round for the first time in her career. You know, she's going to be on the big court. Everybody's going to be behind her. She's playing an opponent that, yeah, sure, she's got an upside, but she's not done it. You know, this is not playing Serena Williams in the third round or Angelique Kerber or someone like that. You're playing against someone who's not really got that big court experience. So I think if they're going to give us a good price, I would play Heather here.
+185 is a damn good price for Heather.
Yeah. You know, I think I might play her here just because she's played okay thus far, and this is not a top-tier opponent. It's someone that might get intimidated a little bit by the size of the court. So, yeah, I think I could probably play Heather here, and then I could come back next week and tell you it was a bad idea.
And I'll join you, and I'll agree with that. But we'll see, though. We'll see. Tatiana Maria. She's a +470 dog. Taking on Maria Sakkari, who's also a +425 dog at points bet. If you're in the United States, jam this one because there's no way Maria is going to beat Maria Sakkari today. Maria Sakkari might win this tournament, Craig.
Right now, she's got about as good a chance as any. The only thing about Sakkari is she's never been past this stage at Wimbledon either, has she? She always kind of... We look at her a lot in the Grand Slams because we like Maria Sakkari here.
You love your
Greek players. You want to see some success. But she always seems to just fall at the wrong time. I think Wimbledon's probably her worst slam. I don't think I can recall her ever going past a third round. So this is uncharted territory for her. Can she do it today? She's playing against a player outside the top 100. They're on court too. I think she'll be quite comfortable with that. I think I'm going to go for it. This is going to be Sakkari's first adventure into the second week at Wimbledon.
I think so too. She got a great kick serve. She serves like a guy. I wonder where she learned that. She plays like an American too. I wonder where she learned that. But at the end of the day, is 95% of Maria's matches are Maria. You know, she has a... For someone who's accomplished so much, she doesn't always believe in herself. And sometimes she lets little niggles get in her way. And I hope that she just takes it one point at a time. And if she does, she'll beat the snot out of this girl. This girl, Maria, a nice player, but this is her big thing, too. She's made more money now than she has probably in her entire career. So, good for her. But Sakkari to go on, there's no question in my mind. I think Sakkari is going to win this tournament. We might see two Greeks win this tournament. We'll talk about that in a minute, though, because we have a big one between a couple of Greek fellas I'm very familiar with. But we'll get. I'm starting to feel proud, Craig. Ons Jabeur, Diane Perry. Jabeur is a huge favorite. You can't really play it, but Jabeur is going to win this match, right?
Yes. Let's just move on.
Oh, right. Okay. I see. Okay. Elise Mertens is taking on Angeliki Kerber. Kerber's a big favorite here. Should she be that big a favorite, though? 265. Plus 252 for Mertens.
Not at that price. No. Mertens is difficult to play against.
I would say three sets.
Almost certainly. I think Kerber's like, she's in her mid-30s now. You don't want to be critical because she did really well here last year. She got to the semifinals last year. She's won it before here as well. But is she going to repeat that here? That'll be really difficult. Mertens is a really good opponent. That one's gone out one of the big courts as well. I think they've recognized that Kerber's really popular. What makes Mertens difficult, in my opinion, is that she plays a lot of doubles as well.
Right.
And, you know, she's going to come to the net and she's going to be awkward to play against. And I think you're right. This has got to go three sets. It's not going to be a blowout in two sets. I just don't see that. I think Mertens has done well, certainly over the last few years. She's one of those players that if she gets to the second week at a slam, that's a good thing for her. And she's been to the second week at every slam before. Her recent performances, you know, quarterfinals, fourth rounds, are quite regular for her. So if she beats Kerber, it's a good result for her. But I just think she'll be a lot to handle for Kerber.
Too much. Play the over, 20.5 games. This is going three sets, if anything. So that's your play there. Now, Allie Risk from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Congratulations to her, because I'm familiar with a little bit about Pittsburgh tennis, and mostly it's shit. But congratulations for her getting so far on her own. You know, with very little direction. She had a good first coach, thank God. But outside of that, she's taking on Maria Buskova. Now, Risk is a -133 favorite. Buskova is a +130 dog. The interesting thing here is the total, 21.5 games. Risk is a slow starter, but a great grass court player. Buskova can knock the daylights out of a serve, plays pretty well, but she also has the yips in her head sometimes. The over 21.5 looks pretty appealing to me.
Yeah, I was trying to find out where this one's getting played. You know, as you said, the Wimbledon website doesn't make it easy to find a match.
No, it sure doesn't.
court 12, which is one of the free courts, but it's Wimbledon's quite interesting because they've got like three show courts plus half a court threes ticketed as well, but courts 12 and 18 you tend to get some really nice matches on.
Yes,
for
you do.
Free
for free.
You get a grounds pass, you can go check out Ali Rick against Buskova today. That's the third match on that court. It should be a good one. I like it. I think Ali Risk did not too bad at Wimbledon a couple of years ago. I'm pretty sure she reached maybe the quarterfinal stage.
Yep. That's the doubles part of her, too. You know, that's the big thing. I think she's going to win this match.
And I don't think this Buskova has ever really made it to the third round in a slam. I think this is like the first time I can remember her in the singles ever getting to the third round. So this is a great chance for Risk to put herself into the second week again.
You got that right. So play Risk and play the over in that one, I suppose. Caroline Garcia, Shui Zhang. Garcia is a slight favorite. Zhang is a short dog, plus 110. Total's 21.5. I'm taking the dog here. I think this Zhang is playing out of her mind. Garcia, for all her acclaim, and she's won a Grand Slam and doubles, maybe more. I don't have it in front of me. Been a top 10 player, right? We talked about that before. But for all that, she has issues too. And if her serve goes sideways, and it's supposed to be very windy today, 10 miles an hour or more, that could make it very tough. I like Zhang today. I like the dog in this one because this is a coin flip. And anytime I get a coin flip, I take the dog.
Well, it's hard to disagree with that logic. Both of these players frustrate me massively. Zhang, in the last 10 years, I don't think Zhang has been past the first round more than once. I think she had a quarterfinal run a few years ago, but every other time I've seen her, she's been decked in the first round of Wimbledon. You know, for somebody with her ability and the fact that she's ranked so highly, you would think she'd have better performances on the grass, but she's just been poor. And Garcia's just, you know, Garcia's Garcia. One week she looks like a world number one. The next week she looks like a world number 1,001.
Right.
We saw the good Garcia the other day against Emma Raducanu. Maybe she'd heard the stories. Maybe the coach had seen the same videos as everyone else. I think you do have to play the dog. You know, you can play Garcia, but it's, you know, Garcia's price has probably been inflated somewhat, or deflated, if you want to put it that way.
Right.
By the performance against Raducanu. Suddenly everyone's jumping on Garcia. I would probably play Zhang as well.
Probably is. So what we'll do is we'll jump to the men for Friday because, you know, so people can take advantage of them. Our listeners can, I should say. And then we'll shoot back to Saturday. Let's go to the men's. Alexander Bublik takes on Francis Tiafoe. Now, this one starts at 6 a.m. You're probably not going to get that or won't be able to get our pick because, you know, by the time I get this up there, it'll be about 6, 7 o'clock maybe. But Tiafoe is a short dog. Bublik is a short favorite. Both of these guys can combust and implode. And I made it a purpose. I just decided that I'm over Tiafoe. I'm no longer going to wager on his matches. But for the sake of the show, I'm going to take Bublik today.
You know, they played a couple of weeks ago in Eastbourne, and Bublik actually won in three sets. And it was one of those bizarre matches where Tiafoe won the first. Bublik won the second in a tiebreak, and then at that point Tiafoe took the bus and went home because he lost a third to Love. So I don't think he was injured. That, do you remember I sent you the video clip for that on Twitter where he hit the serve and it didn't even go in the direction he was aiming? It went completely off in the other direction into the crowd.
Yeah, he hit a sideways one like Edberg did at the Wimbledon final years ago. Yeah, but it wasn't a kick serve though, right?
No, it wasn't a kick serve.
He was trying to hit a flat serve and hit sideways. That's just, you know. You know what? The USTA sunk a lot of money into this kid. You know, for I could get into the reasons, but I'm not going to. You can figure that out for yourself. But at the end of the day, he's been okay. He's got a good personality. I'm sure he's going to end up in the booth one day, but he's going to end up on the short end of the stick today. Take Bublik. right?
You know, I'm going to play against you for a change. He's never made it past the third round at Wimbledon, but sod it. You know, like at some point he's got to do
okay.
it, right? He's got to make it to the second week at Wimbledon, and I think, you know, there's no better time than today, though. So he's not going to get a better chance because he's not playing against the Djokovic. He's not playing against the top 20 guy. He's the seeded player, so this is his opportunity to make some noise. So let's go, Francis.
Yeah, okay. So I just logged TFO. I'll give you the play, but I'll just laugh at you next week. Tim Rieshoven, man. He comes from out of nowhere. He's taking on Nicholas Basilashvili today. This one's going to be a toughie to get in. I wouldn't bet this one anyway, but if I were, I think the reign of Rieshoven is coming to an end, and I think Basilashvili, if the wind doesn't bother him, it'll blast him right off the court. I think it's time.
Yeah, that's difficult. That is, you know, I think when you talk about coin flips, we're back flipping coins again.
Not according to the odds makers. You've got Basilashvili is 2-1. And Rieshoven is -221. Odds
really?
Makers are all over Rieshoven.
Are they worried because he had a good tournament the other week in the Netherlands?
Yep, that's what it is. That's what it is. And this is at Pinnacle, too. And usually their lines are pretty sharp. So, but I just don't see this kid winning today. I mean, he might. But, and again, I wouldn't bet on this. But if I were, I would take Basilashvili. And you know what I would probably do, Craig, is I would probably take the over in this one, 38.5 games. That seems reachable. Rieshoven has been playing matches out of his mind, but 4 or 5 sets, right? And
it's hard to play a guy that's got no history either, right? You know, he's never played a slam before. He's come here on the back of winning a title, and you're like,
in his home surface,
you know nothing about him.
And he beat Medvedev in the final over there. That's true. You know, but at the end of the day, I would just play the over in this one. I think it's going to go 5 sets. I think we're going to look at a couple of tiebreakers here too, because Rieshoven has served pretty well, and Basilashvili, we know what he can do unless he implodes. Over?
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Now we've got... okay, so now I got to flip over here. Yuri Vesely is taking on Tommy Paul. Tommy Paul is a big favorite at -184. Vesely is a +175 dog. And I don't know about you, but I've been impressed with how Tommy Paul has played in this fortnight so far. But Vesely's a vet. And I don't know, man. This is a toughie. I'm going to let you make this call.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome, because I couldn't touch this match in a real match. I couldn't. Betting this, Craig? I couldn't bet this match.
I'm going to play Tommy Paul. I've liked what I've seen. I think it's time for him to start pushing up the rankings.
Okay. Makes sense to me.
I mean, they're not on the big court either. They're on one of the smaller ones. I know what your point, Vesely's. He's a veteran. He's been around for a bit. But this Tommy Paul has been steady. I wasn't sure about him when he came on the scene. I know Vesely. He's a guy who hovers around 50
right.
in the rankings. You know, he's gotten to the second week at Wimbledon a couple of times. He does like it here. He's a big guy. You know, he's 6'6". Big serve, he's going to come into the net. Tommy Paul, I just think there's an upside on this guy. He's still relatively young. He's going up and up in the rankings. The only thing that I have my concerns about with Tommy Paul is that he's not ever really made it. You know, he usually comes to a slam, he loses in the second round. This is his first Wimbledon, if I'm right. I don't think I've seen Tommy Paul here before, you know, with the pandemic, and I don't think he was here last year.
No, I think this is his maiden voyage.
So he's off to a good start, you know,
sure
like
is.
he's doing well. I think he's going to make it to the second week. I actually think, you know, he's playing some really nice stuff. If he takes Vesely out, it'll be his best slam performance, and he'll come back to that US Open with some confidence, and I think, you know, he gets a good draw at the Open. We can see a lot of Tommy Paul in the next few months, and we can make a good bit of money on this guy.
Well, let's hope. But if he wins today, that's going to change. He's already hard to bet at 184, but Tommy Paul it is. David Goffin takes on Hugo Humbert. Humbert's had a really good event thus far, but he's the underdog at plus 136. And it'll cost you $145 to win 100 on Goffin. Who do you like here? Because I'm sort of starting to think that this Humbert is a pretty capable player on these kind of surfaces, these quicker surfaces, and I think he takes Goffin out today.
Difficult one. Goffin's looked really good. For a while, I thought Goffin was finished. He was having some shockingly bad results, but thus far, he's won all of his matches in straight sets, which has been pretty impressive. Humbert's had to battle a bit. He had a battle in the first round. The battle was rude. He's a good player, Humbert. I think I'm actually going to play Goffin. I think he's had a bit of a resurgence. And what price are they giving me on Goffin?
They're giving you minus 145. So that's not too bad. It's under 150. So you're only putting up 145 to get 100. That's not too bad for tennis, that is.
Yeah, I could play Goffin. I might play the over because I think any match with Hugo Humbert is going to go 4 or 5. So I might be more inclined to play the over and go for a 5-setter.
Yeah, I think that's your play, the over here, because we're going to disagree on this one, and I'll laugh at Craig again next week. or he'll laugh at me, I should say. Isner, Sinner. That one's going to be an interesting match. Isner's an underdog, though, at plus 146. And Sinner is a favorite, minus 163. The total is 43.5. I don't think that's going to play. That's too many games, maybe. Any love for Isner? Because, you know, this could be... I'm not so sure about Sinner sometimes. He's starting to get a little testy, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm not touching Sinner. I'm playing John Isner here. I'm playing Isner for sure, and I'm going to play him. I'm going to probably go John Isner, and I'm going to play him to win 3-0 as well. I think if he serves like he did the other night, he probably wins Wimbledon.
You know what? You've got a very good point. Let me see. Set markets. To win in straights, he's a plus 319. Minus 2.5. 319, Craig. That's a big dog right there.
It is. I mean, yeah. I think that's a great play.
I think Isner is going to smack the daylights out of this kid, though. Why did that do that, though? I don't understand.
Unless they know something we don't. Are you checking that one?
Yeah, I'm trying to check it now, yeah. I think they got it all screwed up. Yeah, they do. I don't know what the story is here. Isner's a plus 319. It's not flipping for me the right way. Oh, here we go. I got it now. But they've got it upside down. Oh, well. We'll figure it out. But, yeah, that's the way to play that one. There's no question that's the way to play that one. But this is weird at BetStamp. Something happened there. I don't know what, but whatever. At the end of the day, John Isner is probably going to take care of business. And that's all that really matters at the end of the day. He's going to smash this kid. Let's go here to, let's see, where's the next one? Kecmanovic and Djokovic. Now, Djokovic, again, he's a major, major favorite here. I don't like anything about this match. I would leave it alone. He's going to smear Kecmanovic. There's no question. But what does this mean? This is it for Novak. He cannot play in the United States, and it's not... he's not going to play in the States because he refuses to get a vaccine and they won't let you into the country without one. So he's pretty much done. This is it for him, right?
For this season, it certainly is. He's looking to win his 7th Wimbledon. He's won the last 3, I believe. He's playing against a guy who comes from the same country as him. The guy will probably be told not to come home if he beats Djokovic. So you can see what's happening here.
If he even lives there. But yeah, I get your point.
Well, a lot of these players don't. But yeah, do you really see Djokovic losing at this stage? No. Do you see him losing before the semifinals? Not really. Yeah, it's, you know, there's not even a way to bet on this, is there? Like,
you can't.
What, you know, the winner of this one plays the winner of Basilashvili and Van Vroethoven. You just, I don't see where Djokovic loses until much later in the tournaments. And you can't play the under, you can't play the over. I mean, if Djokovic plays like he did the other day, the under would be the play. I mean, he played against Kokkinakis and he smoked him. I think it was like 1-4-2 or something. And that was just, as you know, it was vintage Djokovic on grass. But I don't know. I just don't see what you could play on this match that's got any value to you.
None. You might as well leave that one alone. But Alcaraz-Ott, you can play that one. Alcaraz is a big favorite, -272. Ott is a +245. But this total looks more appetizing to me at 38.5. I think this goes 5 sets. This Ott has a banger of a serve. If the wind doesn't bother him, this is going 5 sets.
Oh, man. I'm playing Ott. I am playing Ott. This guy has only played one match thus far. His second round match, he came on the court against, what's the American fellow's name? Harrison.
Oh, yeah, Harrison. Yeah, Christian Harrison.
They played for about 15 minutes and Harrison had enough. Ott played his first match and he won 1-2-1. Whenever I saw this guy last year, and he lost in the second round to Andy Murray, but the way he lost, he was 2 sets down and he came right back into that one. And I saw him and I thought, this guy plays on grass, you know, like he might not be able to play on clay or hard courts or whatever, but he looks a business on grass. And I think he did okay at the Open, actually. I think at the US Open, he got to the second week as well. But it's that big serve and the way he plays. I think this guy's going to take it to Alcaraz. I really do think he's going to knock him out.
That could very well be.
I'm going to play Ott here. I like the way this guy plays on the grass.
And I'm going to play the over here. I concur. I like the way he serves. He's not afraid of anyone either, at least not yet. Alcaraz, he's still learning. You know what? He's still learning. But he comes up with some highlights, man. I love watching that kid play. I love his energy on the court. His movement is like Juan Carlos Ferrero. You're looking at a more powerful version of Juan Carlos Ferrero is what you're looking at. And that's pretty freaking scary. I remember one time in Vegas, Craig. He was out there on vacation, the mosquito. And he turns up, and he wore us all out. And he didn't even break a sweat in his Vegas. Hate you. Hate you. Steve Johnson.
I'm just having a look at this Oscar Ott at the minute on his stats, and he's looking good at the minute.
He sure is.
You know, he's had a good couple of weeks on the grass.
Well, we'll see.
This is a big play. What did you say the money was on this?
+245.
So you're getting +245 on a guy who he lost to Medvedev in the Halle, and he lost to Berrettini in Stuttgart. You just listen to that, Medvedev, the best player in the world, and Berrettini, the guy who won 2 titles in the last 2 weeks and missed this one due to COVID. You know, he's beaten, you know, some top players. You know, your favorite player, Denis Shapovalov, lost yesterday. He beat him.
That was a big call, huh?
He beat Basilashvili. I like this Oscar Ott. I think there's good money on this one. And I like, you know, if you're feeling really bold, play Oscar Ott and play the over. That's got to be a good double to play.
That's what we're doing. Now, Steve Johnson, he's had a pretty good tournament so far. He's taking on Cameron Norrie. Cam Norrie, baby! Norrie's a big favorite. Johnson's, I'm not touching this one. I was friends with his father, so I'm not touching this one. I hope Steve wins. But he's not beating Norrie out there at Wimbledon. Not today.
I don't know. Like, I'm not so sure that the surface actually suits Cam Norrie. I think he's a better hardcore player, probably a better clay court player. I've seen him a couple of times this tournament. He's looked okay, but it's an interesting matchup. I don't think they've ever played before.
No.
Norrie's kind of, I don't know. He's left-handed. He's awkward to play against. But I just feel like the grass thing's not his gig. You know, I think like come the US Open, I'll be looking at him and thinking this guy might get to the quarterfinals. But Johnson's just, he's been so good. He's had a great career, hasn't he?
He's had a pretty good career. I got great for him. Yeah, sure. You know what stalled him is his father passing away a couple of years ago, and he had a hard time with that, as he should. You know, his father was his coach, or actually taught him how to play.
These guys are on the big court as well, aren't they? I mean, they're going out last thing tonight on center court.
They
so,
sure are.
Yeah, I mean, Cam Norrie's going to have all the support. That's probably why he's the big favorite. But Steve's—he's been good this week. I really do think he's been good. I think if there's any match I wouldn't touch, it's this one.
Yeah, I think we're going to leave that one. I don't have any play for that. I have no play for that. Now let's move on to Saturday, Craig. Now this is one here that's right off the bat in the ladies' side of things. I mean, right off the bat, you've got Anna Anisimova versus Coco Gauff. Gauff is the big favorite, -200 for this match. Anisimova is a +188 dog. I like the way Coco's been playing. I think the best thing that could have ever happened to her was Emma Raducanu winning like she did. Took all the pressure off her, right? No one's pointing looking at her anymore. I think Anisimova's going to beat her today. Or on Saturday.
You know already that I've said that I've got money on Anisimova to win everything here. So, yeah, I'm playing Anisimova. You know why I like Anisimova? And a friend texted me the other night when she was playing, last night when she was playing Davis, and it's like, that girl you told me to put money on, she's going to lose. And I was like, no, she's not going to lose because she'll dig in. She won't go away. You know, when she's under pressure and she's a breakdown in the third set, she doesn't panic. She fights. When the other girl looks like she's getting back into it, she fights her off. She's got that tenacity about her that I just love. She doesn't know when she's lost. As long as there's a point to play, she'll play it. I just think she's going to be a handful, and I think the expectation here is that Gauff's going to wipe the floor with her, and I don't think she is. I think, you know, Anisimova's going to bite, and she's going to hang on. I think it'll be a scrap. I think it'll go three sets, and I think Anisimova will probably want it more and wrestle her out of it by the end.
Well, there's no question. I think that this is going over. The total is 20.5 games. That's probably reachable, so we'll play that. And we'll play Anisimova. I agree with you. Of the two, the one who will go away first is Coco. You know, if the one thing that I've noticed is that Coco has such a big backswing on her forehand. That loopy crap that they teach in the United States is why their people can't play. That's why.
Anisimova's got the better coaching setup as well. She's got a coach up in the box, not, you know, a basketball player.
Well, now in her defense, and her parents are both teaching professionals. So you have to be careful about that. You know, that certificate is big money, Craig.
No, it's true, but you know.
But here's the thing: is if you have a pulse, and you have the money, $400 or whatever it is to join, all you have to do is turn up. A corpse could get certified as a P1 in the United States Tennis Association, United States Professional Tennis Association, and the Professional Tennis Registry. They're just money makers. They offer you nothing. Continuing education. You should see the setup I just watched. My God, some of the worst development I've ever seen in my life. My stomach used to turn watching that stuff, Craig. I asked one time, why? What's the deal with these yellow balls or these orange balls? These are big money makers. That's all they're about is making money. They couldn't give a shit about developing players. Labeling 7-year-olds as superstars, you know, little things like that. But bottom line is, Anisimova's got the better setup. She's got the experience. And you know what? everybody and their mother. No one's expecting anything from her, and that's the most dangerous that you could be. And don't forget, this Anna Samova probably should have won a Grand Slam by now, or she wouldn't have gotten hurt. And I think she's going to knock the daylights out of Coco Gauff. That's what I think. Simona Halep takes on Magdalena Freck. And you can't touch this one for a lot of reasons, can you?
Nah, just move on.
Yeah, Petra Kvitova, Paula Badosa. Kvitova's playing great. She's a minus 135 favorite. Badosa's a plus 125 dog. I'm taking Kvitova. If I lose, I lose.
Yeah, well, she's won here a couple of times before. She had a big win down at Eastbourne or somewhere like, or was it Nottingham the other week? Yeah, on grass, I think that's where you play her.
You almost have to. Jessica Pegula takes on Petra Martic on Saturday. 240 favorite is Pegula. Plus 227 is Martic. Pegula's played well. Ali Risk's best friend. And at the end of the day, could be interesting, Craig, but I think Pegula wins this one in three sets.
Well, you know me. She's not my best friend because I don't like the Buffalo Bills, but...
don't. I'm not a fan either, though. So
she's a fighter, isn't she? Pegula. I mean, she makes up for some of that natural talent that she maybe doesn't have that others do with the fact that she fights. And given her background and the fact that she's not scraping to survive on the tour, you know, her father's got money, her family's got money. The fact that she fights the way she does is pretty impressive. She's reached two quarterfinals in the last two slams. That in itself is dangerous, and she's going to get to the quarterfinal here as well.
Pegula is the wealthiest tennis player you've ever seen play. I thought it was Vitas Gerulaitis for a long time, but this is different.
No, I saw that Gobus. His folks have got a bit of cash. I mean, he used to travel to events in his spaceship or whatever it was.
Well, yeah, that's true too. But you know what, Pegula? She's set to inherit over $1 billion. And counting. You know, Pegula's family purchased and built a tennis facility in the Pittsburgh area. And that's where Ali Risk was one of the places she trained. Little history there. Anyway, you know what? What are we doing with this? We're passing, or what are we doing with this?
There's not really a huge play on this one for me. I mean, no. I don't see Petra Martic getting through this one.
I don't have a problem with her if she wins a set.
Even that'll be difficult. I think Pegula's like really riding the crest of a wave at the minute. She's found her thing. I think she'll win.
Cool. Now this match here is interesting too. Katie Bolter is taking on Harmony Tan. Now Harmony Tan has found her way into some controversy. The first mistake she made was beating Serena Williams. And then after that, that was the late match. That went three sets. Tiebreaker. Crazy day. But she's more known for bailing on her doubles partner the next day. And she's taken a lot of flack. Her doubles partner actually went on Instagram and gave her a hard time for it. Called her out for doing something that happens quite often. You know, here's how this goes. First off, you're playing Serena Williams, so there's a lot of press. So there, after that match, first of all, she played until probably midnight. And then by the time she got out of the facility, because people were wanting to ask her a lot of questions because she just knocked off the queen of tennis, and then trying to find something to eat in London at that time probably wasn't so great or so easy. And she probably didn't get done. And the high of beating Serena Williams too, you know, she probably had her poster on her wall. Now she's got to get up and play doubles the next morning. She woke up, probably got about 3 or 4 hours sleep, woke up and said, this ain't happening, and bailed. That happens more often than you think. Nick Kyrgios bailed on his best friend, Thanasi Kokkinakis, in this event alone, but Kokkinakis didn't get upset. Do you think that this Kopach was right to be upset, or is this something that she probably should have, I guess she couldn't have figured she would beat Serena Williams, but... Jeepers, Craig.
Oh, you know, look, it's disappointing. You know, it might be her first Wimbledon playing doubles. Yes. I don't know.
It was, and she was really ticked off. Yeah.
You know, that's probably pretty hard. You know, if it's your first time here and you've come here and you know what it's like when you walk through those gates at the All England Club the first time. It's pretty breathtaking, you know, the way that place is set up. It's just to try and explain it to the listeners, with your first trip to Wimbledon for the championships, and you walk into those grounds and you see the flowers and the manicured lawns, and there's not a scratch on the paintwork, all of the brass is shining on all the door handles, and it's incredible, you know. It's and if you're not going to get your chance to go out there in front of the crowd, it's probably a little bit heartbreaking, but business is business, right? If you win the first round match against Serena Williams, you double your money. If you get to that second round, you're not getting, you know, 50 grand. You're doubling up. You're going to get about 100 grand or whatever it is for the second round. If you win in the second round, you're probably funding being able to play on the tour for the next year. And that's what this Harmony Tan's done. And if she, God forbid, if she wins in the third round and gets to the second week, she's going to be big time on the prize money.
And a lot of points, too. She's racked up a lot of points, but she's a 2-1 underdog against Bolter. I like the way Bolter's played. I think it's probably, you know, she just lost her grandmother a couple days ago. I have this feeling that she's going to get overwhelmed by everything today or on Saturday. And Harmony Tan, she pushes the ball back. She knows how to volley. She knows how to serve a volley. I think Harmony Tan's going to pull off an upset here.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I thought Harmony Tan played pretty rotten against Serena, to be honest. It was all very...
weird.
I'm going to chip the ball. It was very pushy, wasn't it? I would just push it back into the court, no pace on it, then make Serena come forward and hit it. I don't know if that'll work as well against Bolter, because I don't think Bolter's got the power that Serena's got. She's not going to try and blow her away. I think you'll probably find Bolter might engage in similar type stuff. The fact that this is going to go in center court is going to baffle me, but you know, you're looking at two players, singles rank 118 for Bolter, 115 for Tan, and that's going to go in center court on Saturday evening, probably.
Saturday morning,
yeah, sorry. That's going to be a bizarre moment. You know, 6 days into a tournament, two players ranked outside the top 100 are probably going to play on the biggest court, or probably one of the most well-known courts, should I say, in the world of tennis. It's at the a showpiece event. It's going to be a bit of a surreal moment, and that's not to say that these two players don't deserve to be there. You know, beating Serena should get you a spot on that court. Bota's a British talent, and she's done well to get to the third round, so it's going to be bizarre. One of these players is going to get to the fourth round, second week, for the first time in their life. I think Katie might actually win it. I think this is going to be kind of like a mini Emma Raducanu thing, and she's going to get to the next round, and then she'll make all the headlines and all the tabloids, and people will be getting a little bit too excited about it. But winner of this one, by the way, plays winner of golf and Anna Samova. So I think there's a good chance whoever wins this one will have an opportunity in the next round as well. But I'm going to play Bolter. I'll play a British player for once.
Okay, we'll log that one in. So now we've got Elena Rybakina and Qin Wen Zhang. Zhang is a plus 155 dog. Rybakina's been playing great. She's only minus 170. That's a little weird. I would think that she'd be favored more highly. Rybakina's been good, Craig, but Zhang has been good also. I think this is one of those. I'm not flipping the coin here. I'm leaving it alone. Rybakina's finishing off points, man. That's one thing she's gotten much better at over her career, is finishing points. Now, if she can finish that problem she has between her ears, she might have a shot.
You know, this Zhang's new, right? She's only 19, so again, like, there's not a lot to talk about here. We don't
Where's
know.
Where's Peng Shui?
Well, that's a different question for a different time. She's not on the court playing against Rybakina, that's for sure. Yeah, I like Rybakina. I think you got to go with experience on this one. But this Zhang's going to be interesting. I think we might come back and play her again quite soon.
I would think in the next couple of weeks. Now, this match is the one that I think is going to be the hardest one to call. It's Barbara Krejcikova. She's a slight favorite. Tomljanovic is a slight underdog. And Tom Lajanovic is playing really well, man. I like the way she's playing. Krejcikova's playing pretty good, though, too. This might be one where I just watch.
Yeah, both those players have won in straight sets, I think, in their first two games. I watched a bit of Tom Lajanovic yesterday. I think she played against Harrison. And she was really, really good. I was surprised at how good she was, actually. I think that this one's not going to be straight sets, and I might play the over on this one.
Yeah, that might be the only play you have is the over here, I think. That might be it. All right, one more for ladies' match. We'll get to the men's, and then we'll let you go. Elise Cornet is playing Iga Świątek. Świątek is a minus 495 favorite. Cornet is a plus 430 dog. Iga had a little yip in her last match, but I don't see any problem here for her.
Not against Cornet, no. I think, did Cornet not upset you the other day by winning?
Yeah, she got me big.
Yeah, I think, like, you're not going to play this one. The value's not there, is it?
No, but I'll tell you the one I'm looking forward to Saturday morning, my breakfast at Wimbledon, something I've been doing. Well, for most of my teaching career, I couldn't even look at it because I would be making money on the 4th of July weekend or playing somewhere. But this one I'll be watching, Stefanos Tsitsipas, Nick Kyrgios. Kyrgios is a slight favorite. Tsitsipas is a slight underdog. That's a big total, 41.5 games. These are hard because you don't – Nick is probably the best grass court player currently playing, but he's also self-destructive. And these two guys don't like each other, and those types of situations usually bring out the worst in Kyrgios. Now, I have every reason to believe Kyrgios will win this match, but I'm not putting any money on any – I'm not betting anything on any Nick Kyrgios matches.
Yeah, I think that'll probably happen as well. I think he probably will win. It depends if he gets himself disqualified for spitting at someone or throwing a racket. Or, you know, he's already racking up fines at the minute. So
that's one of the questions we got is, what did you guys think about the spitting incident with Nick?
Any kind of spitting incident's never a good incident, is it? I mean, you don't want to see
that. Unless he spits
at
his opponent, that's a different thing.
I just, you don't want to see it though. It's, you know, it's foul. Nobody wants to see anyone spitting at anyone. Not on a tennis court, not in professional sports. It's a real sign of disrespect. So,
well, yeah. Back in the old days, in my days, that's happened all the time.
Yeah, you know, we've moved on from that. You know, we want to show a little bit of professionalism. So hopefully we do have a match there that's, you know, professional. And Nick will probably win it.
Yep, I think so. I think so. I'll log it, but I'm not playing it. Full disclosure, I can't do that. Liam Brody. Alex De Minaur. De Minaur is a monster favorite here. Brody is a big dog. But I don't know, man. This is a personal thing for me. This De Minaur, he gives me more trouble than anybody. You know, everybody's talking about how fast he is. He's not as fast as Michael Chang or Johan Krieg. I don't know what these people fall in love too quick. That's why I don't pay attention to these pseudo journalists. But does Brody have any kind of chance at all here?
It's probably about the only place on the tour that he does have a chance.
right.
He's not, like, you know, he has his Wimbledon run every year and he sometimes gets to the second round. He's never been this far before. Is he going to take De Minaur out? Probably not, actually. De Minaur beat Draper in the last round in four sets, and I thought, like, yeah, it was that was a good performance to beat Draper. I think he's an up-and-coming player. Like you, I don't tend to back De Minaur because when I do, he costs me money, and I'm not getting value on the play here, so why would I back someone that I've got a bad record on when I'm not getting value on it?
That's just it. You don't make plays for play's sake. Sometimes we do it on the show, but we also tell you we're not touching it, and then it's totally on you. Now, Jensen Brooksby, Jensen gave me a little spark in my bankroll yesterday. He's taking on Christian Garin. Brooksby is a 220 favorite, minus 220. Garin is a plus 215 dog. A dog, Craig. Do we like the dog, or do we think Brooksby hunts on this one and buries the dog?
Garin's played well, by the way. Garin's swept two guys in straight sets already, so you've got to be a little bit careful.
2-1 favorite with Garin, though. Garin is that's a little steep.
I like Jensen. I do like Jensen. I think it's going to be tough, but I think Jensen might do it here. I think he might get himself into the second week.
He's playing great. We'll log Jensen, but I'm not touching this one either. This is hard. Nadal taking on Sonego. I don't like this match either, Craig. It's really rough. These numbers are terrible. -477 for Nadal. Sonego is a +460. I think Sonego could take a set off him. But even then, I don't know that. And I'm not going to play the under to find out and lose. I'm leaving this one alone. Nadal's going to win the match. Or does he win the match? You know, that's the hardest thing about this is how does it work?
Oh, he wins the match. Last night when he was 2-0 up in a breakdown, Greg Rosetsky was claiming that he was going to lose the match to Barrancas. He was telling you that Barrancas was going to win in five sets. And I'm like, you might win this set, but I can guarantee you he's going to get smoked in the next set. What happened? Nadal lost the third set. Fourth set, first game, smoked him. Not a problem. I think like Nadal's not playing like he plays on the clay, but we're not playing on the clay. That's obvious. Here's a sign of a really, really good tennis player. He wins when he's not playing well.
Right.
What does Nadal do? He wins when he's not at his best.
Oh, yeah. He intimidates you in the tunnel, and I think we'll go with Nadal. But Greg Rosetsky, I still remember at that Wimbledon, breakfast at Wimbledon, watching this. When Rosetsky decided to bolt from Canada and he started waving around the Union Jack. He's not British. No more British than I am. So he needs to stop that. You know, some of the British folks were nice to him because, you know, he was pretty much him and Hammond were all they had. But if he's all you got, you're in big trouble. That's all I got to say. Big serve, though. But that smile used to get in the way of a lot of things. You know, when he used to lean out there with that smile, guys wanted to punch him. Hated him. Hated him, Craig. Zandikulp. This kid's played well, and he's a big favorite of Richard Gasquet, who seems to not want to go away into the night.
Yeah, Tricky Dicky's still going, isn't he?
Tricky Dicky's still going, but, you know, I heard Tricky Dicky's still going in the clubs, too, till 4 and 5 in the morning. You know, it's hard. Well, it's really hard to bet on a partier in his last big tournaments. And his farewell tour. I don't know why he's having a farewell tour, but
I think this is like the best he's done in the last 3 or 4 years. I can't remember him getting by a second round. His career kind of finished around about the mid sort of 2010s, 2015, 2016 was when he started to crumble after that. He's the same age as I am. I think he's 36.
Yeah.
I just don't see much more coming from him. This kid, Van de Zandschulp?
Zandschulp, yeah. Van de Zandschulp.
Yeah, he's like mid-20s, but he's relatively new on the scene. He popped up last year. Dutch tennis is starting to produce, quite a few interesting players. And I think he got to the quarterfinals last year at the Open. He's already done third round at both the Slams this year. He's third round in Wimbledon. If he goes second week here, is this a guy maybe we should look at in the Open and start backing? Because I don't think they're going to start changing the price on this guy because he's not a household name. People don't know a lot about him. Even if he gets to the second week here, gets to the fourth round, I think we can get value out of this guy on the hard courts.
I'm sure.
Very sure. And he's 25 in the world. You don't get to 25 in the world by being a mug.
Yeah, they sure don't sell those points in the supermarket. That's for sure. Yeah, I like this Van de Kamp. I like everything he said. I can't wait to see him play in the hard courts. I can't wait to see him give us good prices. Last match, Craig, Taylor Fritz, Alex Molcan. Molcan is a +361 dog. Fritz is a -385 favorite. He pulled the Becker move. I wonder if Becker was able to watch that from his prison cell. Somehow I don't think he was, but you just never know. Does he have a shot against Fritz? Does Molcan have a shot against Fritz? That's a big number, -385 for Taylor Fritz. I know he's been playing great. That's a big number. This Molcan? Molcan's no joke, man. If he can get inside Fritz's head, and some people have great success doing so, maybe Molcan can too. And if he does, that's a game. Molcan beats him if he can. But I'm not touching this match.
I'm not touching this one, but I said to the same guy last night about Anisimova that if you're looking for a dark horse, you got to pick someone from the bottom part of the draw. And he said to me, so you're telling me to pick Kyrgios? And I said to you, no, I'm telling you to pick Fritz. You'll get a huge price on this guy to win Wimbledon. And with Nadal not playing particularly well, Nick Kyrgios, he can get himself disqualified at any time. This Fritz could get to the final, you know. It's not impossible. You look at the draw, the way it's set out, the way that Fritz plays, let's say Kyrgios knocks out Tsitsipas, Nadal gets through a few rounds. There's nothing to say that Fritz won't beat Nadal the way that, you know, Fritz has been playing. He's playing some really, really good stuff. It's an outside shot. I'm not saying go put your money on it, but he's probably the one guy you would pick if you're not going to pick one of the favorites. Yeah, don't touch this match. I agree with that. But keep an eye on Fritz. Have a look, because he's going to come into play the next few rounds. If he wins this one, he could be really interesting.
I think so, too. I don't know yet. I think the jury's still out on him, but I like him on the hard courts. Unfortunately, so do the odds makers. And we don't ever get a good price. We rarely get a good price on anything. But this is great stuff. Good stuff today, Craig. Thank you so much for getting up early to do this.
Yeah, no problem. It's a pleasure to be here with you, as always. You know, I can hear the birds chirping in the background. You know, are you at Wimbledon? Are you not telling us?
Yep, that's where I am, waiting for my boy Stefanos and my boy Nick to play, but I'm going to watch Maria first. We ratted me out anyway. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of This Week in Tennis. You can find Craig on Twitter at CD Sports Media. You can find me at LineGrinders14. Until next time, enjoy the tennis. Enjoy breakfast at Wimbledon, and we'll see you next week.
This Week in Tennis.